Welcome to The Backlog, a podcast hosted by Adaptivate. I'm your host, Mamta Mehra, an agile consultant of Adaptivate Melbourne. Adaptivate partners with clients to accelerate outcomes by implementing new transformative ways of working. We are a global firm with offices in North America, Canada, Europe, Asia, and Australia. At Adaptivate, we are proud partners of Pledge 1%, which is an amazing organization which encourages corporate philanthropy in the form of time, knowledge, and resources. In this spirit, our guest today is Suzanne Legina, CEO of Plan International Australia. Hi, Suzanne. It is so great to have you on the podcast today, and we're really glad we could make this work.
Well, thank you for having me. It's wonderful to be able to talk to you.
Thank you again, Suzanne. Okay, great. Let's get straight into it and let's hear a little bit about you and your role at as CEO of Plan International Australia. So what does your day-to-day look like?
It's interesting because I've been on holidays. So it's my first week back at work after pretty intensive 2 years through the pandemic. The first year was really, you know, moving ourselves to remote work, but we started to feel like our strategy and our business model was really under pressure. And we took that opportunity in 2020 to really start thinking more long-term about what we wanted to look like post a pandemic, if you like. We started to think longer term and we did quite a lot of work thinking about our strategy, our business model. And then last year, there was a whole lot of implications that flowed from that, that we restructured our organization. We entirely rebuilt it in some ways. We hired in some new functionality. We reorganized the way our teams were set up to meet those new strategic objectives. So for the last 2 years, it's been pretty intense. So the first time I've had a holiday in a while, I've had a chance to kind of reflect that this year is a lot about that process in a renovation when you start to kind of put the interior furnishings in, you start to be able to shop for the furniture and build all the good stuff. That's where I feel like a lot of my thoughts and times at the moment are thinking about how do we build all the cultural foundations, the behaviors, the mindsets that will allow us to really thrive. And our organization exists to serve, you know, the most vulnerable children, and we have a particular focus on gender equality for girls. The pandemic has really impacted on children and young people worldwide. They've been out of school. Their livelihoods and the livelihoods of their parents and families and communities have been massively impacted. Vaccination and health programs have been interrupted. We've seen higher rates of gender-based violence and child marriage. We've seen, you know, a lot that we have to tackle, you know, a scale that is really much bigger than the scale of the problem we had 2 years ago. So we need to kind of fit our organisation or get our organisation in the business cadence to be able to respond to that. So, you know, part of my days are really having conversations with my team, really thinking about the future and how we're setting ourselves up and keeping my eye really on that external environment and the people that we serve and really thinking about, okay, how do we keep that dynamic going and keep ourselves growing and transforming so that we can really serve them in the most impactful way.
Mm-hmm. That's so great, Suzanne. Thank you. And just on the same lines, I guess, since you brought up the pandemic, how would you say the pandemic has impacted the giving trends in the industry, you know, from 2020 and now? Do you see it bouncing back at all? Or was it even, you know, were the trends better during the pandemic?
Yeah, so I think we anticipated, you know, a massive kind of drop in giving as a result of the pandemic, because many of the channels that we use to, you know, obtain new supporters and donors were not available to us. But what we found was a couple of things. I mean, our actual donors, our current donors remained incredibly loyal and committed and found ways to keep giving and even grow their giving. And I think the other thing that happened was, at least for some people in Australia, and I think the experience was really mixed, some people, you know, who kept their jobs and weren't able to spend any money very much on going away or on holidays or on other things, actually had more money than they anticipated and have looked for and thought a lot about what is a meaningful life, how do I want to live my life, where do I want to put my time, my effort, my investments. And so we've also seen, you know, some moderate, very moderate, but still very positive kind of growth in giving over the course of the last year, as people have kind of wanted to find like-minded or organisations that share their values to contribute to.
Thanks so much, Suzanne. That's really great to hear, right? And since we were talking about the transformation that Plan is going through, what would you say is the ultimate end goal in your mind as to, you know, the what Plan's trying to achieve through this transformation initiative? Where do you see Plan in a few years from now?
Yeah, I mean, I would really, we would be successful for a few reasons. The main one would be that we would be able to have more impact in the world with the children, young people, and the communities that we serve. That would be the biggest measure for me, that we would be able to operate perhaps at a scale, be able to reach more people than we currently are. We'd be really able to grow the meaningful change that we're seeing in the world towards reducing inequality, poverty, and discrimination, and allowing all children everywhere to grow up feeling healthy, safe, and, you know, able to kind of reach their potential in every way that they want to. That would be the best measure. From a workplace point of view, I want a place that people love to work in. I would love for people to be bringing their whole selves to work and finding it a place that has great meaning and joy, and a place where they can really contribute all of their talents and feel that they can contribute, you know, not just their technical skills, but their passion, maybe the hidden talent that they keep, you know, hidden away, that they can find ways to bring that creativity into the organisation. Because that's what I think we're going to need, because the problems of the world are wicked. The things we're facing, increased conflict in the world, climate change looming as a huge issue everywhere, that we're going to need, like, really all heads on this and all hearts on it as well. So I'm really thinking in the transformation, I'm wanting people to come to work, being able to sort of unlock those key objectives, to have ambition in them, and to feel like, you know, they're both growing themselves and also growing the meaning we can have in the world through the organisation.
I absolutely love that answer, Suzanne, just bringing your authentic selves to work. I think if your heart and soul is in what you're doing, the outcomes, you know, that come out of it are at another level. So that actually is a really good segue. And you said the words objectives in there as well. So that's a really good segue into my next segment, which is around objectives and key results. So it's been extremely rewarding and a privilege for our team at Adaptivate, honestly, to work with Plan to create objectives and key results, or OKRs as some call it, as a means to guide Plan as you move into this next phase, right? So we'd love to hear from you as to how did you find the entire OKR creation process from start to finish through the remote workshops?
Yeah, I wanted to say thank you to you as well. It's been wonderful to work with Adaptivate. You know, I was at a loss at a point in time in the process where I knew we needed a different way to think about the work that we needed to do aligned to that strategy. And I found Adaptivate just, you know, in a Google search, and I had a conversation, you know, with Chelsea on the phone. And I knew then that there was a real alignment in what I was trying to do and what you guys do as a daily basis. And it was wonderful to try to bring those two things together. I have to say, the objective and key result process was really, really hard for us. It was a very different mode from the way that we previously planned or thought about our work. We tended to do that in teams and in silos. We hadn't always, it had kind of been all bottom up, so we hadn't always connected it back up to the strategic objectives. There wasn't a lot of accountability or transparency across teams about what people were working on and why, and how it connected up to what we were actually trying to achieve as an organisation. So the participation in this, you know, work with you, it really hurt my brain. You know, there were times where I just found myself thinking, I don't know where this is going. I don't know if this is right. I feel at a loss because it was all new to us. But what I really valued more than anything is it brought together our leadership team and then teams to do the work. It really tried to make that work be done in a collective manner and not in silos. I liked that it had a combination of top-down, bottom-up in the way that the work got organised. I liked the fact that it put us out of our comfort zone and put us into this sort of learning space where we had to like think differently and not think, you know, so in such a linear fashion, but think more in a dynamic way. And the quality of the conversations that we had in the course of those workshops is perhaps not measured, but to me was a real outcome of the process. We were just having deeper conversations about, well, what are we really trying to do and how what would that look like? And then it wasn't that we had to work the whole thing out, but we had to get to like, well, what would be the next step and the step after that? And this idea that, you know, you didn't necessarily have to map the entire how, but you had to be really clear about where you were headed and then what the next steps were and then how you would build from there, I think have been really, really powerful. And we've just done our sort of mid-year review of where we're at, and we're, you know, we're tracking pretty well to our objectives. But again, I would say the process of gathering, of having retrospectives in teams, of having conversations in teams and thinking about it, of pausing, of reflecting, and taking that time to learn from, okay, what isn't working so well and what needs to be unlocked there, whether it's resources or clarity or you know, investment. And then what is working well? And the thing that's really struck me is the objectives, you know, hold a level of ambition beyond what we've like put in our business model, put in our operational plans. And that has been powerful too, because that pressure it puts on people, if you like, or pressure is maybe not the right word, but that pull to do more, and what would it take to do more, kind of shifts the thinking from just business as usual. And I've really seen some teams more than others really embrace that and have really, you know, hit their results out of the park. And now are setting even more ambitious goals. And I think, you know, at the beginning of this, I'm not sure they would have had the confidence almost to do that or to put it out to the others in the organisation by a clear objective that we're going to go for this and hold themselves.
Suzanne, you've really touched on some great words there. I heard alignment, I heard transparency, and I heard communication, and you're absolutely right. OKRs is about bringing the right people in the room to talk about the things that matter most. And as I believe as you do your reviews every quarter, it'll only improve and people only get better in terms of the process and how to approach this. So that's really great. And as the organization grows and you continue to do these reviews, you know, cycle on cycle, do you have any other thoughts on how the organization plans to sustain these ways of working, particularly agile ways of working? Do you see plan going in that direction?
Yeah, so we have some team, you know, we decided that we weren't in a position when we did our sort of organizational review to go to a kind of fully agile model in one go was kind of our thinking at the time. But we really wanted to bring agile into our work, and we have some teams working in that way. And that those internal teams are catalyzers, because they're kind of teaching people internally how to do it, and people are watching what they're doing and learning from them, you know, how they're managing their work in a fortnightly basis, how they're kind of undertaking their tasks. So I would love to see us becoming more agile and bringing that kind of those tools and ways of thinking into our work. One of the things that I really liked about Adaptivate is I feel like you know, it can be, you know, agile can be like a religion, you know, or a cult, and it's got a lot of sort of rules around it. And if you don't buy into all the rules, you know, are you really agile? Whereas I really like that Adaptivate saw the tools as means to an end and not just something in themselves. And so what we've done is taken the things that are working for us, and we'll adapt those that aren't, and we'll try to find ways to bring that in. And I think we'd love to see, you know, how else we could bring kind of agile ways and methodologies, you know, into our work where it makes sense to do so. There has been resistance, you know, from some teams. They think in a very linear way, or they're coming from sort of project management backgrounds, which, you know, are very, very different in the way that they're thinking. I would still say the quality of the conversations that we're having, the way that we're having them in a more transparent and open way, is already quite is still changing what we're doing, and it's still worthwhile, and there's still work to do. We're sort of two quarters in to a new way of thinking and doing the work. And so I keep saying to people who are kind of resisting it, everyone wants to talk about the process, and I keep saying, well, let's talk about the performance, because actually our objectives are tracking really well. Yes, we can adapt the process, but you know, the process we had before didn't deliver all the things either. It's just we were comfortable with it. We knew what it was and we knew how to do that. Whereas this is still, I think we're still in learning mode. So for me, I think of Agile as the way to go. I see it as a kind of more dynamic way of being able to progress work and also fail faster and realize, okay, we need to pivot, we need to change, we need to adapt without wasting too much time, effort or money, you know, in learning that at the end.
Suzanne, you're speaking like an Agile expert, honestly. No, trust me, you're saying all the right things, and I'm very lucky to have someone at the helm that has this sort of mindset, because that's what we say. Agile is more about the mindset rather than being rigid about the tools or the processes. There's always flex, but as long as we have the people coming together, you know, and on board, things become easier. So that's great. Thank you. I'll just move on. I'd really love to get and pick your brain on, you know, if any advice you would give other not-for-profit organizations that are going through this kind of transformation or needing this sort of help. We know things are in flux. There's a lot of disruption. So now that you've been through the motions, what advice would you have for someone listening to the podcast today?
Don't be afraid to try new things, and don't be afraid to partner with organizations that can help you learn new skills. I think there's a lot of, I think sometimes there's some very, I think, outmoded ideas of leadership, and that, you know, the CEO or the leadership team has to have all the answers and know how to do everything. And I just don't believe that. I just think our job is kind of more like, you know, I'm a gardener, so I think of myself more like a key gardener. You know, I'm trying to keep my eye on the whole garden and find ways for it to thrive. And I know that there are parts that need to be pruned and parts that need to be replanted and parts that need to, you know, be, you know, planted next to each other so that they can, you know, benefit from each other. And so I feel like I'd be saying to someone, if you have a sense that, you know, you need help, then find a partner that you trust and that you can work with, and help them teach you and unlock new mindsets, new skills, new ways of doing it. I felt like Adaptivate really held my hand through that process. And I also was prepared to surrender control, in the sense that I felt like if we're going to learn a new thing, you know, we're not going to be totally in control. It's going to be a process. And I was more interested in, what could we learn and grow and develop? We'll adapt as we go. And I also would say, you know, challenge, I felt like it was also a good thing for my people, because so many people are in the workforce are thinking in this way, or requiring people to think this way. It feels like a modern skill that they need if they're going to be market competitive for their next job. It just felt like an investment in them, as well as an investment in better achieving our objectives strategically.
That's such a great answer. I love what you said, and I'm going to use that, surrendering control, right? I think we all struggle with that sometimes. And as CEO, it's a whole different ballgame. But thank you for that, Suzanne. So insightful. As we wrap up and before we go, I do want to ask, do you have any book or podcast recommendation for our listeners?
Yeah, and it's not really related to the things we've been talking about, but I have been listening to a podcast by a British GP called Dr. Chatterjee. He writes he has a kind of a wellness podcast and a newsletter. It's always evidence-based. He's kind of drawing on this incredible pool of, you know, people who are thinking about health and wellness. And really he's thinking about, like, what are the insights we can gain in our daily life that can help us optimize our health, our well-being, our sleep, our rest, so that we can thrive and be our best selves. And I've been listening to that over the summer, and there's just really small little tips and insights in there that I've found I've been able to apply in my life that have really unlocked some things for me. And I think if it could work for other people, then they should have a listen. So I've really enjoyed that. In terms of books, I really tried to read some novels this summer. And I read a book called, it's kind of appropriate because yesterday was January 26 in Australia. It's called Another Day in the Colony by Chelsea Watego. And it's so challenging. It's really written by a First Nations person who's not writing for white people. She's writing about colonisation and what it's like to be a First Nations people and an academic and a change maker in that context. It's really challenging to read, but it's like a voice that I've never heard before and that I am feasting on.
Thanks again, Suzanne. It's always just really good, personally as well, to just hear different perspectives and thought leadership in this space. I'm always on the hunt to learn as well. And I love a good health and wellness podcast.
Oh, great.
So thank you. So thank you for sharing. We really, really look forward, Suzanne, to seeing the exciting things that Plan does in the future and hearing about how you go next quarter and the quarters that follow. So thanks again for coming on and sharing your insights, your perspective, and your words of wisdom. Really,
thanks to Adaptivate for your support and your help in doing this work. It was wonderful to have you as a partner.
Thanks again, Suzanne. Well, I think that covers it for this episode. So until next time, just listen to The Backlog and Adaptivate podcast.